Welcome to the Israel Daily News Podcast. I'm your host, Shanna Fold, and I'm here to get you caught up quickly. I've got some top news stories for you today from Israel, and guess what? You're listening, so you're already on top of your game. Survive and thrive, people. Knowledge is the best weapon. Today is Tuesday, August 6th, 2026 in the Gregorian calendar, and the 23rd of 5786 in the Hebrew calendar. Stay tuned for the end of the show, where we'll have a Torah thought by Rabbi Yossi Madvig of Oswego, New York. That'll send us into our weekend feeling lifted. Now, let's get to the news. Two IDF reservists were killed and four others were seriously injured during a combat mission in southern Lebanon after an explosive device detonated inside a booby-trapped house on Wednesday. The squad entered the house and the explosive device detonated upon entry, causing part of the building and infrastructure to collapse. Troops rushed to assist the reservists who were beneath the rubble, and everyone was evacuated. However, the two reserve soldiers were killed, and they've now been identified as 34-year-old Major Reservist Harel Bierenstock from Efrat, a company commander in a reserve paratroopers brigade, and 33-year-old Master Sergeant Reservist Tamir Vaknin, who served as a combat soldier in the same battalion. They were killed during a search operation in Majdal Jun that had not been previously inspected by the IDF. The IDF called the explosion a blatant violation of the existing ceasefire with Lebanon and responded by striking weapons storage sites and other command centers throughout southern Lebanon, while also issuing evacuation warnings to Lebanese towns like the town of Mansouri. The Lebanese health ministry said that one person was killed and 12 others were wounded as a result of an Israeli strike on the southern town of Tibnin, which is about 25 kilometers or 15 miles away from Mansouri, which is the town where people were told to evacuate. This exchange took place as the latest round of talks between Israel and Lebanon continued over in Rome. A U.S. brokered ceasefire was agreed upon between Israel and Lebanon in June in an effort to ease hostilities at the border. The last time an IDF soldier was killed in Lebanon was a little over a month ago on June 28th, when Captain David Hazut, age 21, was killed in an encounter with a Hezbollah fighter. Now, Hezbollah is a terror organization that operates within Lebanon. So we have some issues here, some discrepancies here between Lebanon being a country and Lebanon dealing with Hezbollah as a stronghold in the south of its country. And it's been very hard for Lebanon to eradicate Hezbollah out of its country, but we have been seeing more efforts from the Lebanon side to do that. So far, it's really been Israel up against Hezbollah fighters. Prime Minister Netanyahu eulogized the two men who were killed on Wednesday and offered his condolences, as well as Defense Minister Israel Katz and the regional leadership of Eilat and Gush Etzion. They all sent their heartfelt condolences as well. Harel Bierenstock's funeral took place midday on Thursday at the Mount Herzl Military Cemetery in Jerusalem, while Tamir Vaknin's funeral is taking place Thursday evening, so that should be around right now, in Eilat, the southern city of Israel. Harel Bierenstock leaves behind a wife and four children, one of which is just 6 months old. We here at the Israel Daily News send our heartfelt condolences to the families, communities, and friends who are surely affected by these two losses. Now we're switching to some internal Israeli politics. Former Likud Party MK, or member of Knesset, Dan Illuz, a freshman lawmaker who resigned last month, will run fresh in the upcoming elections with Israel Beitenu, a leading opposition party led by Avigdor Lieberman. Illuz, a Canadian-born attorney, previously served as a Jerusalem City Councilor before entering the Knesset in 2023. Illuz made a name for himself as a right-wing moderate and as a fierce opponent to granting military exemptions for the ultra-Orthodox community. Illouz made it clear that he would not stand in the upcoming Likud primary on August 17th, saying that the party had been hijacked to please ultra-Orthodox allies, end quote. At any rate, he was unlikely to enter the Knesset under Likud and has been previously granted a spot on the slate reserved for new immigrants. And he's a young man. He's in his 30s. Illouz says he's joining Israel Beitenu because it is the party that today represents the national and liberal values in which he believes. Actually, I just looked it up just to double check. I'm glad that I did. Dan Illouz just turned 40 in February, and he was known to be amongst the youngest members of Israeli parliament, and surely he was between 2023 and 2026. He just hit 40. Kol hakavod for your participation in parliament. Now, Illouz actually has supported West Bank annexation and was opposed to hostage deals that were set to free Israelis from Gaza between October 7th, 2023 and October 13th, 2025. He also backed a controversial law to bar UNRWA's activities in Israel and restrict its activities in Gaza, which I believe did move forward. A leaked screenshot obtained by Israel's Channel 12 showed Illouz being booted from the Likud party WhatsApp group after his resignation. In similar news, similar political news, former Likud ministers Gilad Erdan and Yuli Edelstein are now launching a new right-wing party, which was announced today, so that's Thursday, in the latest efforts by former members of Prime Minister Netanyahu's past government to run in opposition against him. Gilad Erdan is a former UN ambassador and has served as public security minister, communications minister, and regional cooperations minister, among other roles. Today, he's the president of Magen David Adom, which is the emergency first responders organization here in Israel. I've interviewed him and hosted him many times. He first entered Knesset in 2003 under Likud, the Likud party. Yuli Edelstein was born in the former Soviet Union and was a prominent refusnik, or Soviet Jew, who was denied permission to leave. He was arrested by Soviet authorities in the 1980s for teaching Hebrew and was released in 1987. After his release, he moved to Israel and was first elected to the Knesset in 1996 as the co-leader of Israel Be'aliyah, a former right-wing party that appealed to Russian-speaking immigrants amid that mass migration to Israel between 1989 and 2006. And mind you, before this, it was very dangerous for Soviet Jews to come here. In 2006, the party merged with Likud, and since, Edelstein has served in a number of positions, including Speaker of the Knesset, Health Minister during the COVID pandemic. Edelstein left Likud last month after decades in the party due to his differences over the views surrounding the ultra-Orthodox draft issue. The new party is said to depart from the current government's controversial efforts to weaken and restructure the judiciary, but would support a more moderate judicial reform that eases political dispute. For more on how this new party, and by the way, Sharon Haskel also launched a new party, a former member of Knesset, she left recently as well. For more on how this is affecting Israelis, we have our political analyst, Binyamin Moalem. Moalem is deeply engaged in Israeli current events and policy discussions. Having worked as a foreign law clerk at the Supreme Court of Israel, he has a unique vantage point on Israeli jurisprudence. Binyamin Moalem devotes much of his time to curating and explaining current events and politics in Israel on his popular Instagram page, By Moalem, where he provides balanced news coverage from an Israeli perspective. Welcome to the Israel Daily News, Binyamin Moalem. Please, we have a lot to go through in the political sphere here in Israel, and I'd love for you to take us to the top stories of what's going on in Israeli politics and why it matters. You know, give us a little context.
All right. Well, thank you for having me back on, Shanna. So today we have another party joining what is becoming a crowded field in that in-between space between those who are you know, for Netanyahu, for the current coalition, and those who are against Netanyahu and want a new coalition that does not include Netanyahu or the members of his current coalition. And so this was a party started by former U.S. and U.N. Ambassador Gilad Erdan, along with former Likud Knesset member and former Speaker of the Knesset, Yuli Edelstein. They are branding their party as a right-wing party that wants to pass a draft law that enlists, you know, they haven't given the specifics of what it would include, but they don't want a draft law that would give mass exemptions to the Haredi members of the public. They are joining a crowded field now of those who, you know, I would say polls show that there's maybe 8 to possibly 12 potential Knesset seats in this area where people who they really don't want, they don't feel any real fealty to one party or another or one coalition bloc or another. They would ideally prefer to see a broad coalition that includes the mainstream Zionist parties, Likud, Bennett's party, Eisenkot's party, and that would cover the a broad cross-section of what the Israeli public wants. However, because of, you know, Netanyahu and other issues, politics has become very divisive. And despite the fact that maybe, you know, parties that may agree ideologically on most things, they cannot sit together because of mainly because of the divisivist nature of Netanyahu, whereas you have one side who they are with Netanyahu through hell and high water. They will vote for him no matter what. And those who are like, I will vote against him no matter what. Now, these parties, you've got three of them right now. You've got Benny Gantz's Blue and White Party, which has polls show fallen below the electoral threshold. He has come out and said, you know, he is as an individual very popular, but his party has gone from 38 seats in polls a little over 2 years ago to zero in current polls. You've got a new party that was started a couple weeks ago by Yoaz Hendel, former Knesset member, and Chili Tropper, who used to be part of Benny Gantz's party. A recent poll shows that they get 4 seats, which is just at the threshold. And now you've got Gilad Erdan's party, which a pre-poll showed that they do not cross the election threshold, but we'll have to wait until next week to see how they're registering with voters. Whatever the case is, it's a very crowded field when the threshold to get into the Knesset is 4 seats. And if each one of these parties, for example, get enough for 3 seats, well, none of them get in and all the votes go to waste and the rest of the votes get divided up between the remaining parties. So what we are very likely to see, a very key date to keep in mind is September 7th. September 7th is when all of the election, the electoral lists are locked. And every party has to submit its final election list to the election commission. And that is a list of who's going to be running in their party. And there cannot be any more alliances afterwards. No more parties can register after that. And I would say prior to that, we will see a number of alliances between various parties to ensure that they can get into the Knesset. Sometimes you do have parties that are stubborn. They say, absolutely not. We're not going to run together. We're not alone. And then they pay for it later. A great example of this is 4 years ago when Meretz and Labor could not come to an agreement to run together. Labor ended up getting in with only 4 seats. Meretz, which would have gotten 3 seats had that been an option, didn't get in at all. And so, whereas on the other side of the political map, you had parties like Itamar Ben-Gvir's party
on the right
and Smotrich's party, they ran together and they got 14 seats. They'll have to do a lot of math. Is the sum of both parties going to be greater than if we run separately? Oftentimes that is not the case. But when you've got two parties that are hovering at the electoral threshold, the sum of the two is likely going to be greater than both of them running alone. In this case, we might have 3 parties who may decide that it might be worth running together. Now, what is interesting, these parties all have big names, people who have been, you know, have held substantial positions within the Israeli government over the years. And they will all be jockeying for that top spot or the top 4 spots to make sure that they get into the Knesset, you know, especially where you've got this new party with Erdan and Yadelstein. We don't yet know exactly who else is going to be joining them. Some of the names being mentioned is Eliza Block. She used to be the mayor of Beit Shemesh. Ayala Chaked has been named as a possible figure who would join the former justice minister, former interior minister, who might join one of these 3 parties in the middle. And Benny Gantz, who is obviously fighting for his political survival. So I think in order for parties here, and we've got other parties also that really aren't polling at all, but also carry some big names. You had mentioned earlier, Sharon Haskell has been forming a party. She's not polling at all. Ilanat Wilf, also a accomplished author. She may join another political framework in order to boost their chances of getting in. And so a lot of these people might be gathering in this area. And if they did form like a big super party with some big names, they may be able to get a nice chunk of the vote. The question is, once the election is over, even if they do have 8 or 9 seats, which is, you know, ambitious, the way polls are indicating now, will they be able to bridge the gaps between the two blocks where, again, Netanyahu has never ruled out sitting with any of his political opponents. He would actually prefer to sit with many of the people who are in his opposition rather than some of his coalition partners who are believed to be more extreme. But those who are in the opposition rule out sitting with Netanyahu under any circumstances. The question is, the big question is, will they be able to bridge the gaps between the current opposition and Netanyahu?
Benjamin, do you believe that what we're seeing with these new parties being sort of center-right parties, do you think that reflects the general sentiment of the Israeli voter population? Do you think that the general Israeli voter is center-right? What does it say about what people are seeking and what people are looking for? Or are these parties, you know, completely disconnected from what voters are looking for?
So the vast majority of Israelis are in the right of center, I would say, especially post October 7th. But this is a trend that began 20 years ago after the Second Intifada. And we saw a lot of Israelis, especially younger Israelis, decide that peace with the Palestinians just isn't going to work. There's no partner on the other side. We need to shore up our security. And obviously, it's a much bigger discussion, you know, the different priorities. But whatever the reasons are underlining it, most Israelis are right wing. There really is only one true left wing party in Israel, or left wing Zionist party, not including the Arab parties. And that is the New Democrats Party. They are polling at about 10 seats. But 10 seats is only about 8% of the population. So that tells us where everybody else kind of falls somewhere on the center to right and so on spectrum, other than the, I guess, in Israeli politics, you'd call it to the left of the Democrats, you've got the two Arab parties. Though in traditional, the way we might interpret right and left, at least one of those parties is not very left, Ra'am versus Chadash, which is technically a communist party. Anyways, what we do have is we have a lot of different ideas that are separate from traditional right and left politics, especially by Israeli standards of right and left. Yes, Bibi, no Bibi being one of them, various figures who have kind of created a niche for themselves. You know, ideologically, is there that much of a difference between Avigdor Lieberman and Naftali Bennett? There's a little bit, maybe when it comes to religion and state, but when it comes to Gilad Erdan or Benny Gantz, you know, all these people have their own parties and everybody wants to have their own party. And when Israeli voters go to the polls, they're typically voting for the guy at the head of the ticket. You know, Likud and the Haredi parties, they have their core bases where, like, you know, I'm voting for my party, doesn't matter who the leader is. Though in the case of Likud, you know, a lot of people are voting for Netanyahu at this point. But when it comes to other parties, they're really just voting for the guy at the top of the ticket, and he's going to try to get a few other figures below him to kind of boost his chances to kind of pull in some of the people who like those figures. And that's really what we're seeing here is, you know, which leader do you see that, you know, do you like the most versus are you right or left? Because all these parties fall somewhere between the center and right. Then you've got some of the more farther right parties like, you know, obviously Ben-Gvir and Smotrich. So, which there's a difference between them as well. All right, another thing that bears noting is the changes that are happening on the political side in the Haredi community. You've got the two traditional Haredi parties, United Torah Judaism and Shas. So on the United Torah Judaism side, this is the, this party has been growing as the Haredi Ashkenazi population grows in Israel. It went from 5 seats to 6 seats to 7 seats. Polls show them getting 8 in the next Knesset because they typically, they go to the polls every time there's an election and they pretty much vote for the same party every time. Shas, on the other hand, its voting base is not completely Haredi. Many, if not most of its voters are what you might call traditional Mizrahi Jews. Many of them served in the army. Most of them served in the military. They vote for this kind of like out of religious fealty, even if they themselves are not completely observant. And what we have been seeing, at least in this latest poll, is Shas falling from what it has 11 seats now. At the last poll that came out earlier this week, they were polling at 7 seats, which would be the lowest turnout it has received in over 20 years. And what's notable about this is that Shas voted. Now, Shas is one of those parties that always does better in the actual election than they do in the polls. So I would take the 7 with a grain of salt. However, I'm sure many of its voters, especially those on the traditional as opposed to Haredi side, who viewed Shas as kind of that bridge between the Haredi community of UTJ, which was really, like, you know, more of a homogenous party, and the greater society, his voters served in the military, and they took more of an active role in, you know, what, you know, Israel's policy should be outside of the Haredi community. And they kind of feel the Shas has moved towards the Ashkenazi Haredim since then, and they don't like that. They want to vote for a party that's more involved, and they might go back to the Likud, which is really is their other base. Whereas you might have some of the Haredi voters of Shas who are like, what has Shas delivered in terms of the Haredi draft over the past 4 years? Nothing. So maybe we'll go vote for UTJ or a different party. Not that UTJ has delivered the draft either, because politically it wasn't feasible. Whatever the case is, that Shas is kind of like in this situation where they got to choose, are they going to go the more hardcore route of UTJ, or are they going to follow what historically they have been the more moderate of the two Haredi parties? And yesterday it was reported that there's this new Haredi party being formed. Again, I would be very surprised if they cross the electoral threshold, but they're trying to get Eli Yishai, the former chairman of Shas, who led Shas from, I believe, 99 or 2000 until 2013, while Aryeh Deri was out of politics. And they want to bring this new moderate Haredi party that would support a Haredi draft law for those who that would only exempt those who truly are studying Torah full time, but call for everybody else who is not to actually enlist in the military. Again, this could just be a way to put more pressure on the Haredi parties, or to have one of the Haredi parties perhaps bring in some of these Knesset members into their list to try to moderate it. But again, it's just an interesting thing to note about what's going on politically on the Haredi side. As enlistment numbers do go up over the past 4 years, I think this past, the 25-26 draft year in the Haredi community, and the final numbers are not out yet, but it was something like 4,500 enlistees, whereas 3 years ago it was only about 1,800.
Okay, so to get you a little caught up, for those of you who don't know, until recently, young people who are studying Torah, who are studying in religious institutions, yeshiva, have been able to get an exemption from enlisting in the army. That has been changed. And now those who are in the age category that are supposed to draft are considered draft dodgers if they are not entering. And it really wreaks havoc on not only their lives, they're not allowed to leave the country, but also it's causing a huge uproar here in Israel politically, where so many people who are joining the army feel that it's really unfair to the whole country to have Torah students, yeshiva students, not joining the army. And there's a big question mark about what is going to happen to those people. Are they going to be sent to jail? So that's a really hot political topic right now that is definitely shaking the votes when it comes to the upcoming election. Is that right, Binyamin?
Well, yeah, this has definitely been a very hot political hot topic. Haredi community believes that studying provides spiritual protection and that there should be people allowed to study full time. And that's something that the next government is going to have to decide how to deal with.
Thank you so much for joining us on the Israel Daily News. And thanks for giving us that political insight.
You're welcome.
We invite you to become a monthly supporter of the Israel Daily News. Our platform discontinued its feature, which was taking contributions from listeners. But don't worry, we have a new one. And we opened up our own page. The Israel Daily News has a direct donation platform. You can contribute monthly or make a one-time donation through our site, israeldailynews.org. Your support helps keep our independent journalism alive and growing. You can also follow us on social media on Instagram, TikTok, X, and LinkedIn at Israel Daily News. That's on social. And for Twitter, for X, I should say, you can follow us at Israel Podcast. And now for a Torah thought by our spiritual guide, Rabbi Yossi Madvig of Oswego, New York.
This week's Torah portion connects to the Haftorah in a few different ways. First of all, just the time of season. Like I've mentioned, we're between Tisha B'Av, the destruction of the temples, and Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year. So this is the third of the Shivat and the Chemta, the seven Haftorahs of comfort, which is addressing, as it says in the Haftorah, an afflicted and storm-tossed Jerusalem. And this parallels the blessings of this week's Torah portion, where we are promised that we will be settled in the land and all of the wonderful mitzvot, the commandments that come along with it. And Isaiah also promises that the foundations of Jerusalem will be laid with precious stones, and no weapon of war that's formed against her will prosper, which offers a structural and spiritual upgrade to the centralized place that God will choose to rest his name, namely Jerusalem for the Holy Temple, which is emphasized again in this week's Torah portion. And then there's the spiritual thirst for Torah, where the prophet Isaiah invites everyone who's thirsty to come for water, and there'll be grain without silver, meaning everything will be given for free, which is a metaphor for Torah. Torah is compared to water, because just like water goes from a high place to a low place, so too Torah comes from on high and comes down here to this earth, not just down here, but to us, humble human beings. We have to lower ourselves and be humble, which also means not being afraid what other people will think about our intellectual abilities. My seventh grade math teacher used to always say, stupid questions are better than stupid mistakes. A person has to be humble enough to know when he doesn't know or she doesn't know and ask questions. It says in the Mishnah in Pirkei Avot that someone who is easily embarrassed cannot learn, cannot be a student, because you're not going to ask questions. So too, when it comes to Torah, we have to ask and learn as much as possible. And finally, it closes with a promise of an everlasting covenant tied to the Davidic dynasty, the coming of the Messiah, of Mashiach, grounding the daily practical commandments of the Torah portion into a grand, redemptive, historical future. May we see it speedily in our days. Shabbat Shalom.
All right. Well, that is it for today's show. Today is Thursday, August 6th, 2026. Tel Aviv has a low of 76 degrees Fahrenheit, which is 24 degrees Celsius, and a high of 88. That's 31 degrees Celsius for the high. We are everywhere. Don't forget to sign up to our Israel Weekly News Wrap. The Israel Weekly News Wrap is a newsletter with the top five stories coming out of Israel from throughout the week, and of course, with a personal note from me at the top. You can sign up for that at israeldailynews.org and scroll down to the bottom, drop your email address in, and you'll be on our mailing, which is coming out on Sunday night. A big thank you goes out to our incredible sponsor, Marianne Vollinger, our producer, Lori May, and our writer, Perry Schwartz. We are so proud of you, Perry. Thank you for giving us all those updates today. Have a great and productive day and an excellent weekend. Shabbat Shalom, everyone.